as the outgoing defence minister, in view of all this geopolitical landscape and threats to Singapore, what would you want to say to the next defence minister? What advice would you want to give him or maybe her?
I would say to him or her, when PM Wong finally announces it, that you'll be fine, just do your best. I believe that the new cabinet will have the wherewithal to deal with it. Once I understand the attitudes towards, the reaction towards experienced ministers going, but remember that we only got this experience because somebody else allowed us to have the experience in the last, well, for my case, 14 years. And you have to ask yourself, basically, are ministers of good quality? I think yes. Do they have their own age? Do they have their own capabilities? Obviously, and you know they're all well educated and the experience. So I think the next person becoming a defence minister will be fine, and I look forward to his or her contributions. I would say that I'm only human, and I'm really gratified with. It's been an outpouring of gratitude from Singaporeans. We're not used to a social media that's so inviting. I mean, we're usually being used to lambasted and the vitriol, but I suppose I could quit that if I knew it was going to be so positive, I would have quit earlier. My epiphany coming to MINDEF was, as I saw it, the Achilles heel of the SAF. We were, if you like, a victim of his own success. As you grow, I mean, our whole concept of the SAF is defense deterrence, that you build up such a capable military that others would think twice, thrice, before entering any conflict with you. That's the whole idea. I mean, Mr. Lee described it as a poison shrimp. I think we're larger than a shrimp now, and you're going to get more than a bellyache. We're quite poisonous at this point of time. But there's the corollary of that is that you can become complacent, you can untested, and long-held assumptions may have been outdated and obsolescent. And a couple of remarks by other leaders reaffirm that epiphany for me. I mean, one was, you know, the often stated view that militaries must be careful that they are not equipped to fight the last war. I mean, that's a reason for it being a much-touted proverb, because it's been true many times. You find militaries enter and say, hang on, you know, the way I organize my equipment has been really what I learned from previous conflicts. And the Ukraine-Russian conflict is a prime example. Nobody envisaged, if they didn't envisage that drone warfare would, even if they didn't envisage that drone warfare would be part and parcel of the military campaign, nobody envisaged the scale of it. Ukraine can now produce 4 million drones a year. Just think about it. And the amount of conflicts, nobody envisaged the information capabilities to have a God's eye view of the battlefield. From the moment you leave your origin to reach the destination, somebody is looking at you all the time, and civilians are looking at you and then reporting your intelligence back. So because of that, and the SAF is very progressive, and I'm very thankful for their strong leadership. And all I had to do was point out that, look, these assumptions, and we have to deal, take them seriously. And we had to restructure to meet future needs. That was in terms of that evolving scenario that we learned from military campaigns. But there was also, in parallel, an expanding paradigm was that the division between war and peace was blurred, right? How would you describe, for example, information warfare or hybrid warfare? And others have now described it as a war between wars. In other words, you're at war all the time if there's an aggressor. It's just that either you can choose not to recognize it, but you're still at war. Somebody is trying to undermine your social cohesion. Somebody is trying to infiltrate your cyber systems, to knock out your civilian infrastructure. Somebody is trying to steal information. Somebody is trying to target you, even your elections. Somebody is infiltrating your systems, all during peace. Now, whose job is it during times of peace? And that blurred the line between a hard stop between peace and war. And the danger was for the SAF to say, well, this is somebody else's job. And, you know, I only be called if there's outright declaration of aggression, which can come masked, and that was terrorism. They don't come in uniforms, but they can be deadly. So to deal with terrorism was very useful, where you realize that some of our previous models were outdated, that we had to have information from the word go. And even before that, our intelligence had to be stepped up to learn of threats, terrorist groups that were either gaining strength or aggregating weapons. It forced a paradigm shift for the SAF to realize that these blurred lines expanded their mission scopes, whether it was in the digital space, what we call the gray zone, the hybrid space, but it also meant that the SAF, even peacetime, had an increased tempo. And so I think I've been very happy with the response of MINDEF and SAF leaders who chose to listen to some of my views, and they took it from there and they ran with it. And I would say that a lot of the developments within the past year have been very satisfying. We've done as much as we can to update the SAF for future scenarios. I don't know if what we've done will be enough. The only true test comes in a real crisis, in a real conflict, and nobody wishes that for Singapore. But I could say, hand on heart, that we've done our best.
On that note, you are Singapore's longest-serving defence minister so far.
I think.
So looking back at your 14 years in this portfolio, what would you say was the most pivotal decision, you know, that helped to transform the SAF and MINDEF and ensure that the SAF stays agile and adaptable?
I've been very fortunate that we've got very strong leadership within the SAF, MINDEF, and my job was to persuade them gently that this makes sense to me. What do you think about it? If we believe this, then let's move faster. And of course, from time to time, I would say, let's move faster on this. I think, you know, we need to catch up on this. I mean, but, you know, that's par for the course for a minister. So I would say that's been the process. It isn't a moment of time, because remember, whenever you, SAF is a big organization. When you change one structure, one platform, it'll take 5 to 10 years. You don't chop and change. If you believe this, you better think it through. And if you believe it, then persist. Because sometimes you don't get the right leaders, sometimes you get it, but you know, it's not the right timing. But as it so happened, we floated the Digital Intelligence Service. We had learned from the Germans, who had done the first, and they did it because of the Ukraine-Russian conflict, when they experienced disinformation campaigns, this time in one of the Baltic states, and they set up the first equivalent of the Digital Intelligence Service, and we said, that's a good idea. And when I was speaking to Defence Minister then, Ursula von der Leyen, who's now European Commissioner, I was asking her more and the generals more, and it gave support to we had been mulling the idea, and when I came back, I said, we have to push with this very quickly. And I told then the CDF, who was Melvin, to let's push with it. And the SAF pushed and did it very fast. Now, this was before cyber attacks became so frequent, scams and so on and so forth. But if we had been slower about it, I think there would have been a loss of confidence.